Welcome to The Ether. Today is Tuesday, April 5th, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by LuArt. LuArt is the first gamified NFT platform built on the Terra network. LuArt provides a seamless minting and trading experience, all while earning you rewards just for being a user. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the community in the Discord server for the most up-to-date news and announcements regarding all the hot new NFT launches, platform upgrades, and new projects hitting the secondary marketplace. Are you ready to put your helmet on and join the movement? Find out more at luart.io. This episode of The Ether is also brought to you by Glow Yield. Glow Yield is the ecosystem of Terra decentralized apps like Lotto and Creators, all powered by DeFi Yields. Glow Creators helps artists and influencers give their fans exclusive perks through membership, NFTs, and more. Glow Lotto is a PrizeLink savings account with a weekly chance to win the big jackpot. Tickets are free and perpetual, which means there's zero chance to lose money. Be sure to follow Glow Yield on Twitter and join the Discord community to stay up to date with all the glowing projects and check them out online at glowyield.com. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. Today on The Ether, Crypto Law and Luna with JW Verrett, CeFi, hosted by Lucky Luciano. Let's take a listen.
Hey, Mandus, how you doing?
Good. Only if you need help.
Awesome.
I know you rug pull you.
Let's give a couple minutes for people to file in, and once I see JW, I'll bring him up.
There he is. Lucky.
Yep. So.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Hey, JW, what's up?
What's going on?
Not much. Here's Seffy. Let me add him.
Seffy. When did Seffy become my assistant?
Everyone's becoming everyone's assistant on Twitter.
Hey, Lucky, can you hear me okay?
I hear you.
One of my friends here that who happens to be visiting the house worked for Goldman, so he was going to listen in on us in the background here. So,
I was able to like the guest of honor is able.
Yeah, I was able to make this meeting without being rude. Okay.
Awesome. So, hey, did he sign NDA, Seffy?
No.
Are we gonna bring him over to the dark side tonight?
Yeah, maybe.
Possibly. Oh, you might.
Yeah. Well, JW, how are you?
Good, man. Good. Thanks for having me. I've been getting a lot of alpha from you guys, listening to your Twitter spaces and aping into all kinds of shit. So thank you for having me, man.
That's cool. Yeah. we were just trying to maybe pick your brain a little bit, and we can kind of drag our feet here until a few people show up.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah. Let me go over the agenda. JW, how much time do you have? Just cause I want to respect your time and make sure I kind of get through the things we want to go over.
You know, it depends on how interesting you guys are. No, I guess, 30 to 45 minutes tonight. Yeah.
Okay.
I think that works for me too. So we're not rude at dinner.
All right. Cool. All right. I mean, Seffy and I could go for like 6 hours. You know that, right?
We are less interesting than Gary for sure.
So I was thinking maybe, JW, we start off with just like a quick introduction so people understand your background, if you would like to share that. And then I'll open the floor to Seffy to kind of maybe just drive a couple of the leading questions. And then from there, I'm sure that will go to 30 to 45 minutes before we blink an eye.
Yeah, that sounds great, man.
So go ahead. If you want to start with maybe background, how you got into crypto and what your current role is and kind of how you're playing in this space right now, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, man. So my background is studied accounting, studied law, and went to and came up as a corporate securities banking lawyer and went to become a professor of that stuff pretty quick. So from 2008, I started teaching financial regulation, corporate securities law, and right at the financial crisis. and started working on the side with a little think tank we have at our university called the Mercatus Center, where I worked with Jerry Brito, who now runs the Coin Center, and Hester Peirce, who's now an SEC commissioner. So it was the three of us against the world for a while. And we had a lot of fun in the foxhole in policy fights, and I've gotten involved in a few policy fights. I'm mostly a focus on corporate governance, financial regulation, and then also accounting and financial valuation. And I also have a forensic accounting and financial consulting business doing litigation support and increasingly crypto-related stuff in litigation consulting. So I kind of have three legs to my career, I guess, the make money doing consulting. I teach law and accounting and finance at a law school, and then I do some think tank sort of policy fights. I've been a big fighter for crowdfunding. And of course we didn't get what we wanted in crowdfunding. It's pretty constrained by the SEC. I was a fighter for the fintech charter idea to create, you know, limited purpose banks and limited purpose bank charters. And, you know, that was always a limited, possibility because it was built on top of the legacy payment system. But in the end, when you have an OCC, a bank chartering agency in the United States that doesn't want to do it any longer, then it's dead. So now I'm getting into crypto because it's the next big fight. And I've done a few op-eds here and there about how we test abuse by the SEC, but nothing too, not nearly enough, I think. And so I was on this SEC advisory committee. I took over Commissioner Peirce's slot on the advisory committee when she got bumped up to commissioner. And, you know, they told me they after my five-year term was done maybe a month ago, they said, okay, we'll give you 5 minutes right after the chairman and you could just say a quick goodbye, just to, you know. And I said, you know, I've got actually a few thoughts I want to share. And so I went out with a bang and I put it up on Twitter. And I guess that's might be how you guys found me. I told Gary exactly what I thought. And then I also did a more formal rulemaking proposal to the SEC, just calling on the SEC to open a call for public comment from the digital asset community, from the crypto community, to hear about all the ways in which the Securities Acts of 33 and 34 and 40, which covers investment companies, just don't fit. The cookie cutter application of those don't fit in the United States for the unique things going on in this sector. And from that, I think it's been a great way to get to know a lot of people. A lot of people reached out and said, how can I help? We love the fight that you're fighting against Gary and Gary's abuses. And so I'm starting to coordinate
but
more.
Real quick, yeah. Do you feel like, do you feel like what the SEC is doing now is truly abusing anything? Or do you feel like they are basically following what they think is the mandate they've been given? And that's like that they feel like they're doing their job. Like, what's your thought there? Like how do you define like what an abuse is versus what, you know, because if you look the other way, if certain types of activities are going on, even though you think that the space like needs those innovations, you know, that's not necessarily your mandate to decide what is or isn't, right? Like, they're supposed to like follow the law like anybody else in theory, right?
JW, did you catch that? Or you might be on mute talking.
Oh yeah, yeah, you guys are good. Yeah, that's a great question, Steffi. And so what I would say to that is the way I define abuse is extending a part of legal doctrine beyond the Supreme Court's intent to capture things that were not intended. My argument on the Howey test, so-called Howey test that the SEC applies to determine whether or not you have to register with the SEC, whether or not you're an investment contract, is I think the SEC stretched well beyond anything the Supreme Court originally intended for that test when it crafted it 80 years ago. So, for example, let's go through the elements of the Howey test that's been at issue that I think got popular attention in the crypto community during the ICO era. And more recently, in the case against XRP, and now the case against the investigative actions against Library, and I think there have been 30 or 40 other Howey-based enforcement actions from the SEC, as well as the BlockFi settlement. As well was not an investment contract test, a note test, a different aspect of the securities test. But anyway, the same sort of vein of enforcement actions. So the Howey test, four parts: is it an investment of money in a common enterprise with the expectation of profit solely from the efforts of a promoter or a third party? That's the Supreme Court's language. Those are the four parts. Supreme Court picks their language very carefully, right? Let's start with the fourth element: solely from the efforts of a promoter or a third party. The profit comes solely from a third party. okay, solely no longer means solely in the SEC's interpretation of the law, right? They, I mean, just look at the Ripple XRP case. Most of the value of that, I mean, you can say what you want about the coin. I'm fighting legal doctrine here. Most of the value of that proposition is not the activities of Ripple, whatever they might be. Any of the other targets, most of the projects that Gary is going around saying, you know, most every cryptocurrency is a security, it's an investment contract. Most of the value of the protocols I'm invested in are not primarily based on the efforts of some individual that sold it to me, right? It's based on the community. It's based on the utility of the token. It's based on user adoption, developer interest for layer ones. It's not based on an individual or third party, maybe to a minuscule amount, but it's certainly not solely based on the third party that sold it to me. So that word solely has been watered down such that it no longer has real meaning. Same thing with the first part of the Howey test, an investment of money. So, you know, I'm pretty sure that you can use, you know, you can use Solana, you can use Ethereum, you can use ETH to buy NFTs, right? So in that sense, it has at least a partial monetary component. Can you really use money to an investment of money in money? How does that exactly work when the thing you're investing in has at least a partial currency function?
Right. It'd be like almost like saying if I bought, I got euros with my dollars. Now, all of a sudden, like, you know, I'm buying a security, which is a product of the European Union.
Right. And then the EU has to register with the SEC as a security. Right. Don't tempt them. They might come up with the idea. Yeah. So I think that there's been some slow accretion of this test over the last 80 years. The SEC and the DOJ increasingly extended. And I think, frankly, if people are willing to fight and go all the way up to the Supreme Court, I think Supreme Court might roll it back and cabin the SEC's discretion quite a bit. So that's why I'm glad, you know, whatever you think of Ripple, and I know a lot of people have some issues and whatever, but they're fighting. I'm glad they're fighting. And I think if they go up to SCOTUS, they might win.
You know, it's interesting, JW, though. There are plenty of coins, though, in many ways that are more securities than not. I think the most recent Web 3.0 style assets have a lot more like variety functions. There's yield functions, there's collateral functions, there's all sorts of interesting elements to them that make them very different than what you would typically consider like the usual stock or what have you. In other words, like when I buy Apple stock, I'm not expecting to use my Apple stock for anything, right? It's not used to power my car or something like that. You know, it doesn't. So these kind of these accessory functions change the game entirely and you know, make everything kind of muddy. But there are examples of some coins like, I don't know, like a Chainlink or something like that, where it's literally a security. I mean, you know, the token does nothing specific. Yeah, it's like you could argue it's a currency and whatnot, but really what it is like in every way, shape, and form, it is a security. What's your take?
Are you sure it's not a commodity instead of a security though?
Well, it's when you kind of like pre-mint the whole thing, right? And then you hold your company holds half the tokens or some major fraction, right? Like, I think it passes that test as a security compared to a lot of other cryptos. What I'm just saying is that there's a spectrum of these different ranges, and I'm not saying, you know, I'm not trying to throw shade on Chainlink specifically. There's lots of similar examples, but here's how I look at it. My question to you would be, okay, so let's say there are some crypto assets out there that either are or resemble securities, right? So does that mean that, and even if those are not even offered within the United States, so the problem comes in where I guess like SEC would go after what? Like a Coinbase for having a specific coin, and they're going to do what? They're going to say, hey, you can't peddle these coins versus other ones. Because remember when the XRP thing came about, the Coinbase and others, like they just dumped the trading of XRP from the platform entirely, remember? So what do you think the role there is between like the exchanges and these what might be constituted as either securities or quasi-securities? Because I look at it this way, okay, for in the DeFi space, right? As long as you and me have access to like Bitcoin or some other commodity-based crypto, we can go get whatever we want at that point. Like, what are they going to regulate? Nothing. Like, there's almost impossible to actually regulate it at that point because you're in the DeFi stack and you can go anywhere in the world, right? So I'm not sure how they're going to play this game except to basically limit access to Americans specifically to these assets. And I don't know they're really helping people or harming them in the long run. But like, what's your take specifically on the role of SEC and interacting with these exchanges? What do you think they're going to do?
Yeah, there's a lot in there. There's a lot in there. You sound like a securities lawyer, Steffi. This is great. You gave me some good stuff. So first, let's say that a token project says, you know what, we want to register, like Blockstack. You know, they did a Reg A offering, and they got all kinds of headaches from the SEC by registering. There were a couple of tokens. I forget the names of them. They're after, maybe after Nordic Gods of some kind in Wyoming, right after the Wyoming Dow LLC statute was adopted, that tried to apply and got bounced by the SEC. But let's say a project says, we want to register. We're ready to comply. There's a lot of ways in which they can't. They literally cannot comply, right? I mean, how, for example, if you're a registered security, you need to have an annual election for a board of directors, and you need to have proxy voting for that board. Well, how are we going to do proxy voting? We don't need proxy voting. You vote your token using a smart contract. That smart contract is not going to comply with the proxy rules, but it shouldn't, because those are stupid, because those are old rules designed for when you have to mail stuff out. So it just doesn't compute, just doesn't fit. And similarly, any blockchain that's doing proof of work, that's got mining, or that has proof of stake, and the validators and the people staking with validators are getting some return for that, and looking to maybe quickly sell their tokens after staking for a bit. A lot of those people are going to get wrapped up in the definition of underwriter and get treated like an underwriter, and then have to comply with the underwriting rules the same way JP Morgan would, which is ridiculous, right? But that's the way the securities law work. They look at everyone around the initial offering stage and say, if you're buying pre-offering with an intent to sell later, unless you get some exemption, you're treated as an underwriter the same way JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs are. It just doesn't fit. There's so many examples of that where the traditional securities laws don't fit. It'd be great if SEC sat down and said, okay, we're going to rewrite the rule book for digital assets, and we're going to look at things that you need to disclose. And that's something I wrote about in this proposal I sent to the SEC. I call it the Digital Asset Regulation Genesis Block proposal. And I wrote down about 30 questions that I think they need to address. And that's just the beginning of all the questions. Some of them I got as good ideas from probably one of the top crypto lawyers I know, Gabe Shapiro, who I hope everybody's following, because he's written up what he calls a forked version of Commissioner Peirce's safe harbor proposal. And he has a lot of different suggested standardized disclosures for tokenomics and smart contract audits and all kinds of stuff that's not currently contemplated in the securities laws that people would like to know, that would be helpful additions. It'd be great if we had an SEC chairman who cared about getting that balance right, but the current chairman we have does not. Now, you also mentioned about kind of the illegality of DeFi, and that's my hope as a hopeless DeFi degen. My hope is that my projects and my favorite protocols survive, because they were just going to be so hard to nail down, because they've done a good job of, they've really thought this through for years, and they've done a good job of decentralizing and maintaining anonymity. And I hope that will be enough to protect them.
Can I ask you about stablecoins and maybe the conversations you've been hearing around stablecoins? And I mean, we get a lot of questions on these spaces. Oh, the government's going to come out with their own CBDC coin. You know, like, where's your thought process around that? And then maybe touch upon Luna. Obviously, I think you understand Luna and where that's going. Maybe your thoughts around that too.
Yeah, man. After a few months of listening to Twitter Spaces with you guys and Danku, I was up. By the way, I was on a YouTube, Danku's YouTube this afternoon. I know y'all are often interacting with him. He said he was going to try to set an alarm for 3 a.m. because he's in Germany, but I don't know if that might have been too much to ask there. On stablecoins, I hate the idea of a CBDC. I think it's an atrocious abuse of government power. The Federal Reserve has been terrible at managing its own conflicts of interest as it runs Fedwire and regulates its competitor payment system, ACH. and regulates the people who use ACH and use Fedwire. I certainly don't want them running a CBDC, much less the privacy concerns I have with them running a CBDC. But the good news is, it was clear from that report that they are not ready to move on that anytime soon. And they made clear that we don't think we have the authority to do it unless Congress gives us the statutory authority. And I don't see that moving through Congress for years.
I don't think the tech is there to handle the types of concerns that emerge from that, where any kind of rational politicians would allow that to enter that easily. I think you'd have a lot of debate, a lot of arguments against. It's hard enough to form, let's say, a government, but to form a actual CBDC is probably a lot harder than it looks.
Yeah. And you know, the House is more than likely to flip next year, and then that means there's an impasse on any financial services legislation, which is rough because, you know, it's there are a lot of things in the Lummis bill that I'm sure we're going to like, but that's not going to move either. But it's good thought leadership, and I support Senator Lummis. She's a good Bitcoin maxi, so she's great.
Well, what's strange about the crypto space too is that it you can project whatever politics you want onto it, right? Like you can, regardless of what sort of like faction you're in, you can create theoretically a crypto that fulfills that kind of governance destiny in a sense, right? Like it's weird how you can make it into anything you want it to. But I guess back to Lucky's question, which was specifically like, okay, so let's say right now, Luna, for example, the primary sort of token of the Terra ecosystem, since that's kind of like where a lot of the crowd here is into and understands the tokenomics of, a significant portion of Luna is held by Terraform Labs, which is, you know, a company outside the United States, of course. They've made no attempt to sort of like spread the Luna coin necessarily to exchanges and stuff. You know, if Coinbase chooses to list it, they choose to list it, etc. You could argue the Luna coin, because a significant portion is in the hands of the, you know, central team, that it has some definite security features to it in a way. But you know, what do you think the SEC would do, or exchanges would do, though, if, let's say, you know, SEC comes around and says, you know, we think this, and including Luna, is a security. And does that mean that the exchanges in the United States simply can't offer it, and then therefore you have to go to a DEX to get it, and that's that? Or like, what do you think would happen?
There's the question of is the SEC going to claim Luna is a security? And there's also the question of, are the banking regulators going to say that stablecoins bought and sold in the United States need to be issued by a chartered bank, and they're not going to allow algo stables to be issued by a chartered bank. But if they're going to try to regulate them directly, that will be hard. I mean, we're kind of watching the case of the SEC's fact finding, I guess it is, investigation of Doe with respect to the Mirror protocol. He doesn't seem worried about it, which is great. I worry about Doe. I want to protect Doe however I can, because he's the genius, man. I have a lot of my money wrapped up in the ideas in Doe's brain, so I don't want to see the SEC come after him.
I don't legitimately think they can. I don't think they have any real jurisdiction one way or the other.
It'll be difficult. I mean, sometimes there have been. I'm familiar with cases, of course. Now these are all cases that involve like outright fraud, like the fact that a security was unregistered that was sold was tangential to the fact that the underlying PAC pattern was like a fraudulent Ponzi scheme, which is obviously not what we're talking about here. But when that was the case, the SEC has been able to get foreign jurisdictions to cooperate and help them, even in Eastern European countries in the 90s when the US and Eastern EU bloc were not as, you know, kind of pre-EU, when the EU wasn't as solid as it was now. But anyway, but that's not the fact, but it's not a fraud fact pattern. So I think it would be hard for US SEC to get like South Korea to agree to a fishing expedition, to help them facilitate a fishing expedition about like a footfall non-registration.
Not to mention that. TFL, who presumably created the DApp, is actually, I think, in incorporated out of Singapore. So it's not even like, you have these layers where the there's not even that, but there's like more than one front end, and it's basically just running on a blockchain, and the mirrored stocks on that chain are essentially like arbed into the actual valuation, right? Like there's no real Apple stock in mirrored finance, right? It's just literally a crypto that just moves arbitrarily.
Yeah.
It doesn't even good job staying pegged to the value either. So,
right. Yeah. So that's my hope is that distance, extraterritoriality. Of course, the SEC has a long history of trying to stretch its power extraterritorially. But I'm really excited that at least in private litigation, that power with respect to exchanges has been cabined quite a bit by the case against Binance last week, which is one to follow. It's, I think, some good news. Where the court said Binance doesn't have sufficient contacts in the United States to be deemed an exchange operating in the United States, which is great because, it was a court that got it, that said, okay, you're facilitating transactions on Ethereum. I'm not going to say Ethereum's located in the United States. It's located globally. It's not located anywhere.
Right.
Specific nation. That's the whole point. So it's great to see a judge that gets it. And that's going to help with respect to the SEC's threat against particular exchanges. Now, going back to something earlier you asked me about, I do think Gary is signaling, this is his favorite gotcha line, and I call it the Gary gotcha, and it really frustrates me when he says, surely one of the tokens of the hundreds listed on he doesn't name anyone specifically, but he means Coinbase and FTX US, surely one of them must be a security, and therefore you must register as an exchange. He doesn't tell us which one. He doesn't tell us how, partly because, he's not sure he would win if he claimed one particular one was a security, because there's a lot of uncertainty there for him. He doesn't hold all the cards here, but he's making that veiled threat, continues to make it. And that's what scares me.
So I want to ask you the veiled threat, and this is kind of where I was hoping to maybe pick your brain a little bit. Where's the pressure coming from? And I'm going to kind of lay it out in this perspective. So there's, I think you've heard of Voyager. Voyager's offering 9% on a stable coin. They're a brokerage, not an exchange. Steve Ehrlich, former E-Trade founder, is trying to kind of give an FU to the banking system for the crypto space. And then there's obviously Anchor, which you're well aware of, in the Terra Luna ecosphere, offering 19.5%. And we're continuously in spaces where people are moving away from banking industry. So do you think there's pressure coming from there? Is it politicians? Is it, I'm just curious kind of with your background and your connections, like where does the pressure come from that people don't want to adopt crypto?
You mean the pressure on Gensler or the pressure on TradFi getting into crypto?
You can do both. I mean, just kind of the crypto adoption, Gensler, coming across.
In other words, is there the conspiracy is always that like there are powers that are sort of like pushing Gensler to do one thing or the other. Is this him independently, you feel like, has a specific style of vendetta against, specific types of financial instruments? Or do you think this is some other background, like, bigger play happening is, I guess, people's big question always.
Is he a puppet to someone, and who's pulling the strings?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say puppet. I would say he's a very astute DC creature. So let's talk about him a little bit, about his history, right? So in the late 90s, Gary is Assistant Secretary of the Treasury Department in the Clinton administration. So this is the time when Bob Rubin was Treasury Secretary. This is a time when the New Democrats were in charge, and the Democratic Party was very Wall Street friendly. There was a kind of an alliance between Wall Street and Treasury. So they passed through Gramsci-Bliley, which is a law that I support, a very kind of libertarian law too, that helped investment banking side compete with commercial banks, helped commercial banks compete with investment side, and got rid of this artificial distinction between the two of them that both of them had used to, frankly, artificially artificially increase rents, increase fees. So he's a very pro Wall Street assistant secretary in that time, right? So then he goes, he fades away. And then in the Obama administration, he comes back post the 08 crisis. Everybody wants to get tough on Wall Street. He leads the CFTC through the Dodd-Frank Act. And guess what? He's the new sheriff in town. He's who he needs to be for the time. He's the new sheriff in town. cracking down on Wall Street and hedge fund swaps activity and reining it in, right? And it becomes close allies with Liz Warren. Before she was Senate, she ran an oversight committee that looked into the events of the crisis, and they became allies. So now he's playing this. So now Senator Warren is, look, she's a one-trick pony. She came up, she made her popularity being the figurehead, tough on Wall Street, which, by the way, libertarians like me hate Wall Street. I mean, we hate, but our view is just don't bail them out in the first place. Let them fail. It's the Democrats that voted to bail them out. But anyway, she made her name as kind of a tough on Wall Street character. She's decided to pull the same trick because it worked for her 10 years ago, and be the Chicken Little, claiming the sky is falling on crypto and crypto systemic risk, and it's just going to be just like 08 financial crisis again. And that's her shtick. She's decided that for whatever reason. I don't know. And so she's his backer. She got him in there as chairman. So he's not gonna let there be any space between him and her. I think that's the just naked raw politics of it. That's what's going on.
So you feel like he's kind of like a political creature at this point, but may not really, like, you know, the idea was, hey, you know, this guy teaches blockchain classes at MIT, and so therefore, by the way, I wasn't that impressed with his class. By the way, I kind of watched that. I was like, whatever. it wasn't that insightful to me as a, like, you know, get someone that actually is like an actual tech dev in blockchain and have them go, you know, work for the SEC instead. But yeah, he seemed like more of a creature of habit in a sense, but I don't know that he really brought, do you feel like there's anything rational he's bringing to the table regarding blockchain crypto space regulation or how it should be perceived? Is he an advocate in any particular way for any particular thing, or is he just sort of trying to play the neutral, like, good boy SEC like leader?
He's just stuck to his speeches are just basic talking points without any kind of analysis there, no nuance there. And you know, there are people on the staff at the SEC that get like projects can't register and just cookie cutter apply all the 33 and 34 Act concepts to them. They understand that you'd have to have exemptions to do it. But then when they send those ideas up the chain, they get to Gary's office and then they just die because he's not going to do it. He's not interested in any kind of accommodation because it would cost him politically with his backer. And then that's it.
My theory on the whole regulatory space is that it has to ultimately be crypto natives. People that have used, particularly use cryptocurrency to its fullest extent, who then, let's say, become politicians, you know, as a separate thing. It's almost like, imagine like medical regulation. Like, so I'm a physician by trade. So if I go and run for politics, I might have a specific, you know, impression about what I think should be happening in the regulatory space in medicine, for example, right? So the insights are going to be very different than what a, like, just straight up politician might have about, you know, how to run healthcare or something along those lines. And I think until we have more and more politicians who are just saturated with using crypto and really understanding more of the nuances of it, I just don't think we get there through just like teaching people. Because if you just think about our spaces and things that we do, right? Like, you can have a lecture for 8 hours, right? And barely scratch the surface of anything, right? So how in the world do you get FaceTime with politicians and give him that elevator pitch that's going to make that difference? I just don't see how to do that. It's just too, the plumbing or whatever of crypto and how it all works and why it could change the world is not the subject of a 5-minute sort of elevator discussion usually.
Yeah, I'd love to see every SEC commissioner be someone who's been a general counsel of a DeFi protocol. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, or has built one, right? Or built one for some particular purpose.
Yeah, maybe. Although sometimes those skills don't always coincide.
Yeah, right. Of course,
the right skills to know how to be a Washington player.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You have to be a political animal too.
So right. maybe JW, could you touch upon, you know, and obviously this is theoretical and obviously your opinion, but what do you see coming? What do you think is going to happen? What would you tell the crowd down here to kind of start doing if they want adoption of crypto? Just maybe give me your kind of what your best guess is.
I think we'll see we'll see deadlock in Congress for the next year. Everybody's just going to be focused on running for stuff. They might throw a few bills out there, but nothing's going to pass this year. Next year, maybe we'll have hope of something passing, but it's always a long haul to get financial regulation through of any kind. And hopefully, you know, the Gensler's term's not going to last forever. And hopefully the selection next time for Joe Biden will be more moderate Democrat, where there's a chance of having somebody from the Democratic Party that's pro-crypto. That's growing. That movement is growing a lot and fast. And you could see the winds shift with the text of the president's executive order. I think that thing was going to be tougher than it was. But in the end, they saw that there are members of Congress who are touting that they're pro-crypto. You know, I love Bitcoin. Maybe they don't even really believe it, but they're at least saying it. There are a number of members of Democrats in Congress now who are pushing crypto-friendly bills, like Darren Soto. So I think they read those political winds and they pulled back on the executive order. And hopefully that movement continues. So as I think y'all have mentioned before, we continue a bipartisan move in crypto in Washington. Because yeah, it's definitely where libertarian ideology and progressive ideology intersect in so many ways. That often happens. There are a lot of ways where that happens, but this is one of those examples, I think, where it does happen a lot.
So JW, one question: how the states are now operating individually, right? They are coming up with pro crypto regulations, even the salary deposits directly into the people's account and stuff like that. How the SEC is going to handle all this, one state after the another?
Well, for the most part, the SEC preempts states. If you if a crypto project wanted to register with its state regulator, that could get you out of SEC regulation, but that really limits what you can do. It's a very limited regime. I mean, if you're going to do that, you might as well just do a Reg D offering instead. So I don't think that's really going to be a solution. It might help us on the stablecoin side and on interacting stablecoins with the banking system if we have states like Wyoming creating bank charters intended specifically for crypto-native kind of custody. I think Anchorage started out as a Wyoming charter, right? Hopefully that continues. It's fun to see states and cities say they love crypto and they love to accept it as payment for taxes and stuff like that. I mean, that's great. It's a good continued adoption. That's not a huge step, but it's nice to see it. But they can't really help us a lot with the federal overlay, at least in the United States, because there's so much federal power concentrated in financial services regulation. It's not really a state-based system at all.
There's probably an arms race element to this, though, in the sense that more and more countries are doing all sorts of, DeFi and crypto related activities. You know, there's going to be eventually a movement politically that, as a measure of either national security or otherwise, we have to keep up with that tech and we can't just let that go. So that's my hope as well, that it's not so much the cooler heads that will prevail, but the hawks that will prevail.
Yeah. And it's great that, Britain's taken a less aggressive tone. Which is a good sign. Canada is, on the one hand, better than us because they have not only Bitcoin ETFs, but Ethereum ETFs, ETH ETFs. But on the other hand, they have their own version of the Howey test, unfortunately, Ontario Securities Regulator, at least. But they're better than us.
They launched Bitcoin ETF and all that. So one of the senator's speech I heard, he was saying CFTC has a better regulation on crypto than SEC. SEC has nothing to do with it. So is that true or is it something contradictory I heard?
Well, there's a jurisdictional fight going on between the SEC and the CFTC. CFTC regulates commodities. SEC regulates securities that meet the Howey test or other related tests. And, some things are clearly commodities like Bitcoin. Some things are clearly, I would say, probably not securities, more like commodities. But even then, I'm not sure there's a lot of space for that trading, at least in DeFi, but to be regulated by the CFTC.
Because the commissioner himself saying in one video it's a commodity and in another video it's a security. So there is no clarification at that level. So what do you think, like what people can expect, what kind of clarification they need to go move forward? Because this is the innovating space, right? And we will be left behind, like last in the ladder.
Yeah, the tip of that spear is the exchanges are going to be pulled in two different directions between the CFTC and the SEC. And by exchanges, I mean crypto exchanges that may or may not be. So FTX is registered with the CFTC, but I don't think all of the crypto exchanges are registered. I don't think Coinbase has any kind of CFTC registration, right? Gensler said in a speech yesterday, he said exchanges are increasingly have a, he's backpedaling and he says, well, I admit not all tokens on crypto exchanges are securities. Some of them are commodities. Therefore, I'm going to have to start working with the CFTC. That's more of an admission than he's ever been willing to do. So that's, he's retreating already. He's given up a little bit of ground. And
well, he probably already realized how many people get harmed too when you just start making statements, right? He can actually end up moving the market himself. Oh, by the way, let me drop off. I've got to run, JW. We should catch up another time, but otherwise, my wife is the one who's going to murder me here for dinner.
We're right at 40 minutes, so that worked out perfectly.
Yeah. Let's do one last question, Lucky. Thanks, Seffy.
Yeah, let's.
Thanks for being my assistant, Seffy.
Yeah, it's all good.
let me get one from the crowd. Let me see if anyone wants to come up real quick, JW. While I wait for that, let me just ask you something. Has there been any conversation around, when we think about the banking and the future, like, are you hearing anything around people actually leaving banking and the banking system kind of getting frustrated with the cryptocurrency?
Well, gosh, man, I certainly have been. I can't tell you how many times there's a new protocol I want to jump into that has a few days left. And I think, man, it's going to take me so long to get my fiat into, like 3 months ago, it was not easy to get fiat into Luna. Maybe you guys had some better ways than I did, but it took me quite a few moves and quite a few delays going from Fiat Bank to native Luna.
Yeah, I mean, with Kato and Alice and those things kind of turning up now in cash, I mean, there's ways to get much quicker, which we're seeing that change. And so that's my fear. Is
you just need to ask for help. That's it. We can help you.
Yeah. Okay, good. Thank you.
I brought up Tim here. Tim, do you want to ask a question here? He was the first to hit request. So guys, sorry if JW's taking one question here.
Yeah, go ahead, thanks. Tim. So here's my question. Do you see any way in which Luna UST has more risk than other non-stable coins? I know it might sound counterintuitive, but I wonder if there's ways in which UST could actually have risks because there's no way to regulate it.
Lucky, you want to take that or?
I as somebody who first of all, there's lots of risk. The only way you get opportunity and reward is with taking risk. I think that to Doquan's credit, to the Luna Terra community's credit, you've been very open about that risk. I mean, everybody I follow and people on here have been very clear that yes, the death spiral issue is real, and it has killed algo coins before. But we think we have a better mousetrap here, particularly with the new Bitcoin reserve that's going to operate to stabilize the system, and then is this going to diversify into eventually, I think, other non-native reserves. It's very risky. But to me, the benefit that algos bring to the stablecoin area space is diversification of financing of these stablecoins. I mean, the problem in the last global financial crisis was that every bank around the world was doing the same thing in the same way. They were, borrowing short and lending long for real estate whose value was pumped up by their governments and then packaged into derivatives. That's
And so when they all failed in the same way. It's better to have a stablecoin space that's financed in multiple different ways. You know, Tether's doing its thing. It's got its own challenges, but it's got us pretty far so far in this space. USDC's, you know, centralized, and that's fine. They're going to get a, I think eventually going to get some kind of a limited purpose bank charter, and they're doing their thing, which is fine. And we've got, you know, algos that are backed algos and some algos that are not collateralized. An algo like Terra that's, I guess, somewhat centralized now, but it's increasingly growing more and more decentralized. So it's a decentralized evolving, I guess.
Algo is probably Frax is another one. Frax and USD are both in Frax, that category.
Sure.
I
think so. I think diversity is our friend. When you're talking about systemic risk, diversity is your friend.
What I was talking about more was from a regulation standpoint, because if there's a way to control Tether and Circle, whereas there's no way to control, then do you block, you know, exchanges from carrying USD?
That might be the regulatory risk touch points will be at the centralized exchanges that have that act as onboarding for new retail. That's where it will be. And I think you hit on it. It could be eventually once they get every crypto exchange registered, one of the new rules might be no algos on here, right? That might happen. But I don't get the sense that Terra Labs is needs Coinbase to put UST on there to thrive, right? They're doing their own thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have a choice, right? Either you use DEX and then convert from allowed to something not allowed, right? Yeah. Or you move the country. You know, there is a choice always. When it's diversity, that's what it is, right? What you choose as a diversity.
I love Doe was a, did a one of the podcasts in the last week I saw him do, or maybe an interview or something, and they were asking him like, "Do you worry about American regulation?" And he's like, "By the way, you know I'm in Korea, right?" No, I'm not really worried about American regulation. I'm building a currency for the world. It was great.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I do have other requests, but I don't want to bring them up if you're out of time or if you want to take one more. It's up to you.
Yeah, I gotta run, man. But let's okay. I'm up for this again. You want to do this again?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll get Steffi and you and me in a group chat again, and let's do it again. This was awesome.
That'd be great. Well, thank you. I owe you guys because, like I said, you've been giving me alpha for months now. So thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys. See ya.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was Crypto Law and Luna with JW Verrett and CeFi, hosted by Lucky Luciano, recorded on Tuesday, April 5th, 2022. This episode of The Ether was brought to you by Talis. Talis Protocol is the NFT platform for independent artists on Terra. Talis helps to provide artists with the tools and resources needed to transition from traditional art into the NFT world. With their V1 launch coming soon, Talis will be the place to see real-world art reflected on Terra. Be sure to join their Telegram and follow Talis on Twitter for updates on their roadmap, validator, and other Talis news. Find your next favorite artist on talis.art. This episode of The Ether was also brought to you by Orbital Command, a community validator on Terra dedicated to educating, expanding, and promoting the Lunatic community. Have you heard about the new Terra Invest Strategy Discord server Orbital Command spun up? If you're looking for a chill place to chat about different Luna stacking strategies, or looking for some alpha, or if you're trying to find the best UST farms, or even if you just have a quick question you need answered, be sure to stop by TIS and say hi to the Orbital Command gang. Hell, I'm even in there sometimes when I'm not editing hours of CeFi spaces. You can find me in that server chatting about NFTs and answering basic Terra Luna questions. The link to the server is in the show notes, and for more information, check out orbitalcommand.io. Terra Spaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. Sipping on a little bit of sin I've been giving, try to keep it written down so it feels like I've been living. I've been realizing a minute reality ain't got limits, going out my fucking mind, testing out the physics, stretching out the distance. For instance, let me be specific, the risk is hedge funded the business, betting on the difference, ingesting all the research, sleeping through the rebirth, sliding out feet first, sleep tight little dreamer, early to bed, early to rise with a rugged ass demeanor, taking beats to the cleaners. You know I love my t-shirts and the people
people who support my little dream here. Transparent cows, I gotta steer clear. 2020 going down is one fucking weird year. Take a second look around, the psyops is winning. Set the table, we just biopsy dinner.
Now, I'm gonna react to that and act like I'm telling you a personal anecdote. Something to break the tension. Something to endear myself a little bit. Something kind of, embarrassing. And you guys are gonna make an aw sound. It's true, it really happened.
They got a tracker in the phone, tracking everywhere we go. When it's final, I don't know. I already sold my soul. Getting ready, rock and roll. Tip the first domino. Feeling up, I'm in a bowl with these avalanche flows. Stop and rest on the road. Gotta get where I'm going. And the rest of y'all know that we hit the ground sore. And I'll be coming for the fuckers that be summoning the trouble. Running on the double while I'm handing out the W's. Putting wins on the board every fucking day. They love me on the team because I know my fucking place. Better get in where you fit in. I'm delivering the meaning. I inherited the demons, always sneaky, never seen them. If I'm breathing, I'm reading, I'm not even being conceited. I need to see for myself if you think that I'm believing. It's the season of reason, y'all be seizing the research. I'm receiving the meaning, that shit's called teamwork.
It's not so much as so little as to do with what everything is. But it is within our self-interest to understand the topography of our lives unto ourselves. The future states that there is no time other than the collapsation of that sensation of the mirror of the memories in which we are living. Common knowledge, but important nonetheless.
Terror spaces.